The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Taoiseach Simon Harris and Tánaiste Micheál Martin have said it is now not safe for Irish citizens to travel to Israel or to Lebanon. Several other countries have also urged citizens to hold off on travelling or to leave the region. The Middle East remains on high alert after Iran vowed revenge on Israel, which it blames for the assassination of the Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu is also facing unrest at home with protests over the weekend in Tel Aviv. Joining me now to talk about this is Professor Paul Rogers, author and emeritus professor of peace studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Not safe to go there, and the warnings not just in Ireland but elsewhere.
Yes, in fact, the British government has positioned an amphibious warfare ship just off the coast to evacuate staff at short notice. I say that's an auxiliary, not a warship itself, but it has this purpose and is able to do it. And other countries are doing the same. There is this suspicion, I think, among many countries, even more so in the Middle East, that something is about to happen and that it's very difficult to predict what will happen. An indication of this, I think, is the Jordanian foreign minister actually went to Tehran yesterday to talk directly to the leadership in Tehran to try and advise them not to retaliate in any major way. Now, Jordan does not have particularly good relations with Tehran, so it's an indication of their concern. And I think that extends through to the Gulf states, the Saudis and the Emiratis and the rest. There's always this concern. I think the reason is, very clearly, is that you would expect the Iranians to retaliate in some way. Ismail Haniyeh, as you said, was actually killed in Tehran. And this is seen as an affront to the sovereignty of Iran. And they will want to retaliate. But the suspicion is that unless it is a sort of something symbolic, then the Israelis in turn will use this as a reason to actually extend the war. And that fits in with what your news reader was saying just now about the unrest in Israel itself, where essentially Netanyahu is deeply unpopular for this reason, not bringing the hostages home, and also domestic reasons. And the suspicion is that he actually wants to expand the war in some way as a way of diverting attention. Now, that seems very cynical, but the problem is he does have a history of doing this, which is why overall the fear is that this could suddenly escalate out of control. And that, I think, is why we're seeing all these different actions.
And the other countries who have advised the withdrawal of their citizens, Australia, France, Canada, Japan, Jordan, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, all recommending their citizens get out of Lebanon particularly. Now, the mixed messages from Tehran, they say they don't want an escalation of war in the region, but at the same time they want revenge on Israel. I know it's not particularly nuanced, but there are many different ways of exacting a revenge without going to all-out war.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And it may well be that they will go for something which is well short of a huge attack, something rather more symbolic. But I say the problem here is that whatever they do, it just might give Netanyahu the excuse to escalate himself. And of course, I mean, it was the Israelis who decided to kill Ismail Haniyeh in this way. And so in some ways, they were responsible for setting this particular round of kind of terrible tit for tat up. But now the position is that it is Iran, which in a sense, use the term, holds the cards as to what happens next. But the fear is that unless it is a fairly small-scale symbolic action, the Israelis will respond in a very large way, even though the Israeli Defense Forces would be very reluctant to get into a major war with, for example, Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. So this is where we are, and I think this kind of fear of escalation is going to persist for some days until the Iranians do something, whatever it is, and then we find out how the Israelis will react.
Well, whatever about the saber rattling by Israel and by Tehran, in the meantime, Lebanon has been sent emergency supplies to re-equip its hospitals. The World Health Organization has sent 32 tons of medical supplies in anticipation of casualties.
Yes. Well, one has to remember that the last time there was a major conflict between Hezbollah and the Israelis was in the 2006 war. At that time, the Israelis actually sent ground troops in, and they had extreme difficulty. They lost many of their troops. And so the Israelis relied far more on aerial bombing. But this was not just of the Hamas area, of the Hezbollah areas. It was much wider than that. The first major attacks in Beirut were on the Dahiya district, which was where basically Hezbollah was largely concentrated. And that became a kind of word use. It became the Dahiya Doctrine, where you actually go for the civilian population supporting a group if you can't actually treat the control, the paramilitaries within that group. And essentially the fear is that what the Israelis did then on a smaller scale, they will do again on a larger scale.
And that is a war crime.
It's a war crime, yes. But the point is that it's killing, it inevitably involves huge collateral damage if you're going for the economic infrastructure. All sorts of factories were destroyed and the rest back in 2006. And essentially, that is how the Israelis would work it, because they can't do it on the ground. Hezbollah is far too well embedded on the ground for it to be defeated. And essentially, it's no different from what is happening in Gaza on a much more terrible scale, in which Gaza now has been more or less destroyed as any kind of functioning area. And essentially, the fear is that the Israelis will have, if they decide to go to war, it will be much more of an air war than a ground war, with all the costs embedded in this. And hence, as you say, this extraordinary decision of the World Health Organization to pre-supply equipment and the rest into hospitals, anticipating lots of civilian casualties.
Now, time was when America appeared, at least, to call the shots. I mean, they seem pretty helpless in this particular regard.
Well, I think the thing is that this is a matter of awful timing. And the timing, of course, is the American election, because so much of it revolves around Netanyahu wanting to see basically Trump get in. Now, that has actually become more significant. I think we have to realize the significance of Kamala Harris replacing Biden, because in some ways, Biden had this long 50-year sort of support for Israel going right back to when he was a young senator. But he's stuck through that right the way through, even though many people in the Democratic Party would want him to be much tougher. Now, the point is that obviously Trump is seen as the ideal president as far as the Israelis are concerned. And the assumption was he would get it. But if he didn't and Biden got in, it wouldn't be seen as a disaster. Kamala Harris is a very different person. We simply don't know what her stance would be. But the probability is that she will be closer to what you might call the progressive Democrats on this issue. And so I think as far as the Israelis are concerned, it really is more important that Trump gets in, and they will put all they can into that. And Trump has all this support from the evangelical Christians. We forget this, the Christian Zionists. And that actually figures a lot in what's going to happen in this election.
However, if Kamala Harris picks Josh Shapiro as a running mate, who's certainly more pro Netanyahu and the Israel hardliners than Kamala Harris would be, that's a mixed message in itself.
It is indeed, yes. And I mean, that's going to be important. I mean, the word also, you will know far more than I, that this may well be announced late today. And so I think this will have to wait and see that. But you're quite right. I mean, Shapiro is more of a friend of Israel. But one has to remember the role of vice president is not that strong in the United States until the instant that the vice president becomes a president. And then, of course, it all changes.
And Paul, what about the protests in Israel? I mean, you mentioned those who are, and we had it in our headlines, the idea that Netanyahu's gone for escalation rather than a hostage deal. But he also has more protesting from the ultra-Orthodox Jews who resent what the Supreme Court decided, that they could be called up for military service.
Yes. Now, Netanyahu is pretty good at sort of playing one side against the other. It's very difficult to see how he would do it now. And yes, it's an unstable government for certain. And you're getting some extraordinary statements coming out from the religious parties. You know, one very recently, a leader of one of the parties saying, well, you know, it was acceptable to starve Palestinians if that's the way you get the hostages out. We'll talk about a war crime. That would be a prime one. But essentially, I think this comes back to the point that Netanyahu depends still on the average Israeli, if I can use that term, offering support because of the state of the war. And it, in a sense, as long as the war continues, Netanyahu's his state. But I guess he is, and I think this is true of many sort of really good analysts, they would say that if you get even a fairly short pause, which could extend to a long ceasefire, that may well be when Netanyahu goes. And then, of course, if he goes, he starts facing all those legal problems that he has and may well end up in jail for other reasons. So he has a personal reason for staying in power, that's for sure.
It's quite extraordinary that one man's ambition to stay out of jail for other crimes, corruption, could cause the deaths of so many people simply in pursuit of his own personal security. Anyway, the other development, I suppose, over the weekend was UNRWA firing more of its employees for complicity in the October 7th attacks. And it again allows Netanyahu, I suppose, to say, I told you so.
Yes, very much so. I mean, I think UNRWA investigated 20 people and found there was enough evidence against, what was it, 8 or 9 of them, for them to be required to leave their jobs. And that, of course, will be used very much by the Israelis because they've disliked UNRWA right from the start, right since 1948-49, when it was set up to support the refugees. They've seen it as the means by which the refugees have survived on many occasions, particularly in the last couple of years. But the reality is that, you know, even now, Hamas has considerable support in Gaza. And it has, probably has growing support in the West Bank. And there's been a recent poll from a reliable outfit which suggests that. So you have this extraordinary position that, you know, if you have an organization, basically a UN-funded organization, with, was it, 10, 12,000 employees, it's pretty unlikely that you won't get a few of them who will basically go out over the top. But of course, as far as Israel is concerned, you can damn the entire organization for this. It's interesting that the British government, at last, under a change of government, has actually agreed to return to the days when it funded UNRWA, having withdrawn some months ago.
The hypocrisy of, you know, the Israeli army will admit to some bad behavior by its people when the evidence is presented to them, video evidence or whatever, they don't damn the entire IDF for bad behavior, but they're prepared to do so in the case of UNRWA.
Yes, I mean, there's been a long report in one of the Westminster papers, the London papers, The Guardian this morning, on a long study done by Beth Salem, which is an internal Israeli human rights organization, which basically says that the prisons for Palestinians are now just torture centers. Very strong language, but sort of with many, many pages of evidence it. But yes, I mean, this is another problem. And that, of course, means that in turn, what the Israelis are doing, perhaps unconsciously, is setting up long-term issues stretching over generations of problems ahead. Because what they are inevitably doing is radicalizing new generations of young Palestinians. And that is in nobody's interest, let alone Israel's itself. Mm-hmm. In many ways, you could say that Israel is now less secure than it was on the 6th of October, simply because of the way it's responded. You can understand it, but that's the reality. It's a less secure country than it was.
Paul Rogers, author and emeritus professor of peace studies at Bradford University. Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.